Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is award-winning mystery writer Michael Connelly, author of the new thriller, The Lincoln Lawyer, published by Little Brown. In the weeks to come, we have Zadie Smith, Audrey Niffenegger, Nicholas Evans, Dan Savage, Clive Barker, Charles Blackstone, Al Franken, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, and welcome to the Tattered Cover Bookstore. Thank you so much for coming out on this cold and rainy night. But that's probably the best time to come to bookstores, so we appreciate your support of our events, and we certainly appreciate your support of independent bookstores. Tonight, I'm going to introduce Robin Vitamus, who will be introducing our author this evening. Robin is a freelance journalist, and you will probably recognize her name from seeing it in the book review section of the Denver Post. So please welcome Robin Vitamus, who will introduce our author.
Thank you. And I will keep this brief because I know nobody wants to listen to me. Michael Connelly published his first novel, The Black Echo, in 1992, and that's when readers first met Harry Bosch, the loner LAPD detective who continues to live by the creed that unless everyone matters, no one matters. In the intervening years, he's given us more, but never enough, of Harry Bosch, alternating these series novels with standalones like The Poet and Chasing the Dime. The Lincoln Lawyer is one of these standalones, but it truly stands by itself in that it is Michael Connelly's first legal thriller. Janet Maslin in the New York Times said that Harry Bosch would be a hard act to follow, that is, until yesterday when The Lincoln Lawyer hit the streets and the bottom-feeding defense attorney, Mickey Haller, was introduced. Mickey, the Lincoln Lawyer, is so named because he works out of the back seat of a Lincoln Town Car while he's being driven around by one of his clients who's working off legal fees. He's not Bosch. Instead of seeking justice, he's looking to exploit every single weakness in the system. He, like Bosch, is comfortable by himself, but this guy is a wicked and often self-deprecating smart mouth. And he's an outsider, but he's an outsider in a way that Bosch would never be. To say that The Lincoln Lawyer is an excellent novel doesn't give you any idea of how much I truly enjoyed this book. A better way to express it is to say that I envy each and every one of you the opportunity to read this book now for the first time. Please join me in welcoming Michael Connelly.
Thanks a lot, Robin. Thanks for being here. I just started. The book just came out yesterday, so I'm kind of new to the road, and I'm kind of working out my shtick, if you will. So I'm a little bit scattershot, and I want to talk about this book in a bunch of different directions. But I thought it'd be best for me to read a couple paragraphs from the book because I think it kind of encapsulates the milieu in which Mickey Haller views the world and his profession and his job, his specific part of his profession. As Robin said, he's a criminal defense attorney. To him, it's not the city, Los Angeles is not the city of angels, it's the city of angles. And he works them all and knows them all. So this is the book's in first person, so this is Mickey talking to you, the reader. The first ad I ever put in the Yellow Pages said, any case, anytime, anywhere. But I changed it after a few years, not because the California bar objected to it, but because I objected to it. I got more particular. Los Angeles County is a wrinkled blanket that covers 4,000 square miles from the desert to the Pacific. There are more than 10 million people fighting for space on the blanket, and a considerable number of them engage in criminal activity as a lifestyle choice. The latest crime stats show almost 100,000 violent crimes are reported each year in the county. Last year, there were 140,000 felony arrests and then another 50,000 high-end misdemeanor arrests for drug and sex offenses. Add in the DUIs, and every year you could fill the Rose Bowl twice over with potential clients. The thing to remember is that you don't want clients from the cheap seats. You want the clients sitting on the 50-yard line, the ones with money in their pockets. When the criminals get caught, they get funneled into a justice system that has more than 40 courthouses spread across the county, like Burger King's, ready to serve them, as in serve them up on a plate. These stone fortresses are the watering holes where the legal lions come to hunt and to feed. And the smart hunter learns quickly where the most bountiful locations are, where the paying clients graze. The hunt can be deceptive. The client base of each courthouse does not necessarily reflect the socioeconomic structure of the surrounding environs. Courthouses in Compton, Downey, and East Los Angeles have produced a steady line of paying clients for me. These clients are usually accused of being drug dealers, but their money is just as green as a Beverly Hills stock swindler's. So that's a little bit about how he views his world. And you might say after hearing that, why would I want to read about this guy? And I think I'm asking for a little bit of patience. You know, normally I write about people that from page one, from word one, you're on their side because they're investigators trying to solve a crime. Most cases, it's a murder. They're on the side of the light. And I've done that for 15 books, most often with Harry Bosch. And I think I have your on Harry's side from the start. And in this book, almost from the start, you're going to think not much of this guy, Mickey Haller. But what I'm hoping for is you'll keep reading. And I think fairly early in the book, you should reach the point that you're riding with him in the back seat of that Lincoln, and you're seeing his world, and you're getting a sense of the arc he's on, because it is a redemptive story. Mickey's from a family of lawyers, and one of the adages passed on to him through his father, also named Mickey, was that the scariest client you could ever have is an innocent man. And that's because there's so much work involved if you know in your heart that your guy is innocent. And there's only one acceptable conclusion to the case, and that's an acquittal and not guilty. Your man walks away. And if that doesn't happen, it will scar you. If you know an innocent man is in prison because you did not do the job correctly, then it knocks you down. You're scarred for life. And that's what you want to avoid, and that's what Mickey has spent his life, professional life, trying to avoid. And this is the story about when he can no longer avoid it, when he must address that. And so it kind of puts him, I think, on a redemptive arc. And so I think if you stick with this story, you're going to like this guy the way hopefully you like someone like Harry Bosch. You'll find the good quality, and you'll see the relentlessness of his nature. And that's what drew me to the project. That's what I like about this book. As I say, it's really the flip side of what I've been doing for about 15 years. It's my 16th book. It's the first time I've kind of crossed the aisle, I think. And in doing that, from the writing standpoint, it gave me a lot of freedom. Had a really good time writing this book. It was a book that I kind of carried in my back pocket for a long time, and when it finally got to the time that I sit down at my computer and write it, it really came out of me quickly, which one reason why it's the second book I've had out this year. This book just flowed, and I know I've said it here before, what happens in the writing process translates or continues in the reading process. And so I think if you give this a shot, you'll enjoy it, because I really had a good time writing it. I should talk a little bit. Robin explained the aspect of the title, The Lincoln Lawyer. I made sure they put a car on the cover so people wouldn't be thinking this was a historical about Abe Lincoln. That would really be a change from my usual stuff. But this whole thing was born about 5 years ago. At the time I was living in Los Angeles, I went to the opening day of the LA Dodgers baseball season. first day, you have no losses. It's high hopes. It's wonderful. You know, it's long before the Dodgers take their usual dive, and so everyone's happy, and you end up doing something which you rarely do in Los Angeles, and that's talk to strangers. And I was sitting next to a man who, obviously, you know, I didn't come with him; we were strangers. And through the course of the game, I in conversation, I learned he was a criminal defense attorney, and I knew about. I didn't know that there were exactly 40 courthouses in Los Angeles County where you could have a criminal trial, but I knew there was a lot because I had been a newspaper reporter in that town for a number of years, and I had covered courts for a while, and most of the professional, the defense pros, not the court appointed, but the criminal defense attorneys that I knew kind of gravitated to two or three courthouses. They kind of did a regional specialty, so they weren't driving all over the county. And so I asked this guy, where's your office? Because I thought that would make me understand him more if I knew what part of the city was his specialty. And he said, actually, it's my car. And that's when he quickly explained, when I kind of probably smirked or something, that it's not because he's a failure or because he's in financial straits. It's because that's the best way to do the job. And he explained to me in greater detail than I actually use in this book how he had outfitted his Lincoln Town Car. He used a client to drive him. He sat in the back. He had a fold-down desk. He had a wireless fax. He had wireless computers. He had in Los Angeles County, there's five different area codes. He had five cell phones with all those area codes, so people would see his name in the phone book and think he was local and call him, and he might be, you know, on the other side of the county. And he had a whole setup on how to handle the whole county and go to where the cases were, go to where the money was, so that he could keep on keeping on. And I've been a longtime lover of legal thrillers, you know, from To Kill a Mockingbird to Scott Turow. And I write these, for the most part, I write these books about Harry Bosch, but I know I can't write about him every time I'm writing. Every year I have to take breaks in order to keep him vital and alive. And so when I take those breaks, I'm always looking for something new. And for a number of years I've been looking for a way into writing a legal thriller, but I didn't feel like I had anything, a unique angle on it. And by the time I left that baseball game, I knew I had that angle because I had never heard of a Lincoln lawyer before. And so that was about 5 years ago, and it took me that long. It wasn't like 5 years of research. I wrote other books, obviously, along the way. But when I could, I sat in courtrooms. I had a friend who was a judge, a criminal courts judge, who allowed me access to her court and behind her court and the jails and all that. I spent some time with that lawyer who sparked the idea, and I spent some time with some defense attorneys that I'd known for a while, including a college roommate. And from all this came the story. The bit of research that was the most fruitful for me was the drinking. I spent a lot of time in a bar that criminal defense attorneys congregate in at the end of the day and have their one or two martinis before hitting the road. And I found out about this place, and I spent a lot of time there and heard a lot of good quotes, a lot of good war stories, and many of those stories end up in this book. And so I'm hoping, if you read this, that you'll... What I try to put in all my books is this veneer of accuracy. Obviously, I'm a slave to drama, a slave to character, before I'm a slave to getting everything exactly right. But I want there to be the sense that this must be what it's like, and I want this to have a sense of this is what it's like in the trenches of the legal system, an overburdened legal system in like they have in Los Angeles County. And so ultimately it's an anti-hero story. Most of my books I start out with a hero on page one. Harry Bosch wears a badge, wants to do the right thing. Everybody counts or nobody counts. This guy doesn't have any of that code, but I'm hoping that by the end of the book, as I say, you'll be sitting with him in the back of that Lincoln and be on his side. So I hope you enjoy it. If there's anybody who has any questions, feel free to ask him. I know there's a prosecutor sitting here, and he probably just wants to get out of here right away. Since I'm writing about the mortal enemy now. No, I mean that gets to that veneer of accuracy. You know, you're obviously I'm making I have a made up story here and a made up character, and this goes with Harry Bosch as well. You want to ground that fiction in a reality. And, you know, for me to make up crime stats like that, I think would just totally undercut that, because I want people to read this book and believe that Mickey Haller could exist or does exist, that he's out there. And there's things that are obvious I do. They're on the page. They're facts on the page. There's things that, you know, they help me in the writing. In this book, the judge, scenes with the judge, it's a real judge. The courtroom is real. You know, she's the one who let me do my research in her courtroom, and in a way of thanking her, I use her as the judge. And, you know, no one will really know that, but it sure helped me when I was writing the book, because I could see her in my mind, and I'd been in that courtroom when she dressed down criminal defense attorneys, and I had her do it the same way in my book. She got prosecuted, actually, for smoking. She's a smoker, and you can't smoke in courthouse. She got caught smoking, and it was scandalized and all that. That's in the book, you know. So you try in the small details, still the telling details, to be real, to tell the truth. And I think, you know, of all the whole book, 400 pages, I read you one page. I obviously would read you the truth. And I think it's almost like a clubbing of the reader to tell you that that's how many crimes occur in one county. It kind of really shows you, I think, how overburdened the justice system in L.A. County is, and how someone like Mickey Haller can exist and move through the cracks of this, as he calls it, a rusted, broken-down machine. Yeah. See, one question, and then they all start coming. When I started writing this book, I thought it would be a one-shot deal. And but I do a lot of drafts, and I got through with one draft, and I was about halfway through the second draft when it hit me that I like this character. He will be back, and so I did some things that will connect him eventually to the tapestry, if you will, of all my books. It's kind of a cool thing. If you don't have to have instant recall of all the details of my books, but in the second one, Black Ice, came out way back '93. Harry Bosch recalls, there's like about a three-page segment where he's recalling how he came back from Vietnam and decided he wanted to find out who his father was, and he does the research. He finds out his father was an attorney who represented his mother, and his name was Mickey Haller. And he finds this out just as he's dying his father is dying of cancer. So he meets his father on his deathbed. He dies, and then Harry goes to the funeral. Not being part of Mickey Haller's life, he stands off to the side on the hill and watches from afar. But he does see that Mickey Haller had kids. So Harry knows he has half-brothers and sisters. And this guy is Mickey Haller Jr., so this is Harry's half-brother. None of this is mentioned in this book. It's the seed planted for the next time Mickey comes back. He's got a big surprise waiting for him. So, yep. The judge, whenever I use, there's like real cops in this and all so forth, I always let them read either the whole manuscript or at least the sections they're in, and let them say what they want to say, or you know, say take me out or whatever. And she was happy with it. She was okay. I mean, she's also in her federal term, meaning she's not running for re-election, so she didn't care. So, yeah. A lot of my characters are cynical. This guy's cynical. But there's an underlying idealism that I share, and that's that, you know, especially in L.A., murderers get off. They get, you know, it happens famously in Los Angeles. But I still believe it's the best system, and if you think the system's wrong, what is the replacement? I have no idea what could be better. So I still believe it's the best system. And if you believe that, you got to believe in the tenet that everyone is entitled to the best defense possible. And so if you believe that, it's hard to have – there's an ongoing joke through this book that actually becomes a clue, or, I mean, part of the plot of, you know, that's very demeaning to to criminal defense attorneys, and there's millions of jokes. Since this book comes out, my email is full of people sending me criminal defense attorney jokes. And so that really kind of I'm getting off the question here. I still have let me just finish your question. I'll go on with this other thing. I still have that respect. I still respect the system. My research did not undercut it in any way, I don't think. And I think if you get to the end of this book, you'll see why, or you'll understand my take on it. You know, most of the time I write about detectives. I'm a writer because I was inspired by the work of Raymond Chandler, and he wrote about a guy, a private eye, who was misunderstood by society, or who was outside of society. The cops didn't like him. Some of his own clients despised him. He was a total outsider, and then I became a writer. But for the most part, I write about Harry Bosch, who feels like an outsider, but he isn't. He carries a badge. He's an insider. I really feel that this is the first book I've written that connects to the whole Chandler thing of writing about a societal outsider. And so it has nothing to do with your question. I don't know how I got down this road. But that's one of the reasons why I have decided in the process of writing this book that I can't let this character go. I have to bring him back because it's really kind of brought me close to the reasons I wanted to be a writer. He asks about me, about Harry Bosch, how long he can last because he ages in real time. And I really feel the days are numbered. That's one reason why this book is out now instead of next year. I don't want to miss a year with a Harry Bosch book. I felt I had to write this story at this time, but as soon as I was done, I told my publisher, you know, get it out as soon as possible because I don't want to miss a Harry Bosch year. Harry is born in 1950, so sometime this year, I've never said his birthday, but sometime this year he's 55. And the reality in L.A., for a number of reasons, is that you don't see, you know, homicide detectives in their 60s. So I really feel like I have to about 60 before I'm begging the reality, that veneer of reality that I love to have in my books, that I don't want to turn against that, you know, in order to keep this guy going in unrealistic terms. So I think forward progression of the series is about 5 years. There's still a lot of stuff I could go back and explore. I've planted seeds. I'm conscious of this, you know, and I'm a gathering string. I'm doing all kinds of research on the SLA, which, you know, had a big L.A. component and tried to kill cops in L.A. and all that stuff, and I'm really fascinated by that segment of L.A. history, and I know I'm going to write a Harry Bosch book set in 1972 eventually. So when I say in the paper that his days are numbered, the forward progression is numbered for sure. But hopefully I can still fill in some of the background with some good stories. Yep. My work schedule, it depends on where I am in a book. Writing to me is all about velocity, momentum. And the hardest thing is to start a book. The second hardest thing is to start a chapter. You know, so when I'm starting a book, my hours are very short. It's a grind, and it's tough. And eventually the story starts coming together, and you gather momentum, and the hours expand. And, you know, by the time I'm near the end of a book, I'm writing almost all waking hours, you know, if I can. I would say that I on average it takes me about 11 months to write a book. I'm probably writing more than half of it in the last 3 months because the first eight are that grind. And then I hit this point of velocity where I can't be stopped, and it's kind of like a writing euphoria. That's what I live for, those 3 months. The rest is the tough haul to get there. How did I go from journalism to writing crime fiction? It was all part of a master plan. No, I mean, it was a master hope, you know. I first wanted to write crime fiction. That I came to this idea when I was 20 years old that discovered the works of Raymond Chandler, and I wanted to do this. I wanted to try to do it. And the next question is, how do I get to that point? I really don't know anything about this world of crime and so forth. And so I decided I could either be a cop, or I could also do something like be a journalist, which would teach me the craft of writing, and also possibly through my press pass get me into the world I wanted to write about. So I took that route. And so I became a journalist, always with the idea that this is the staging ground, or this is the research time for what I want to do. And so there wasn't a difficulty in the transition. It was something I'd been waiting to do. Yep. Most of the cops that I know are great storytellers. You know, so in some ways I think it could have worked out for me if I had been a cop. I don't know about the bias aspect of it. Cops, to use Joseph Weinbell's term, they all suffer from premature cynicism, and you know, you see that all the time, but you get that also as a newspaper reporter. You know, I think I got pretty cynical about the world, and that infected some of my writing in the novels and so forth. But I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure I had to take the path that I took, because I think that journalism really did teach me how to write, taught me aspects of observation and the craft of honing things down to what's important. Obviously, you wouldn't get that writing police reports. I don't know if I'd still be standing here if I had taken that route. I wanted the poet to be a road story, and I wanted it to be elsewhere and end up in Los Angeles. And so it was kind of like, well, where do I start it? I grew up in Florida. I worked in Florida as a journalist before I went to Los Angeles as a journalist. But when I decided to leave Florida, I interviewed at two places, in Denver and Los Angeles. Those were my two choices. I wanted to end up in one of them. I ended up getting hired first in Los Angeles, so I went to Los Angeles. So now I'm writing the poet, and I want the guy to be a newspaper reporter. And I had been interviewed in the Rocky Mountain News newsroom in the new building. I'd been there for three interviews, so I kind of knew the newsroom. I knew the layout, so it was kind of like chosen. It will sound kind of weird, but I was chosen because I didn't have to research that aspect. I knew what that would be like. And so that was out of the way, and I could start writing. Funny about the story and the poet, is the cities that he goes to are the five cities where my brothers and sisters lived at that time. And so I would visit them, research them right off the trip. And that's really why all those cities were chosen. It was like Chicago, Baltimore, and South Florida, West Gulf Coast of Florida. Yep. When I write them, I don't picture anybody. On any of my characters, I always build them in my mind. And I've written so much about Harry Bosch, that image is pretty solid, so I can't really picture anybody. I will say that one of the big influences on him was, his creation, if you will, was Steve McQueen in the movie Bullet. So there was like a quiet, cool, so much was said in what he didn't say in that movie. There were aspects of that character I wanted to get in Harry Bosch. And so when I'm forced to give that Hollywood answer, that's the closest I can come. I really don't. I know two things. The beginning, you know, what's going to set off the story, the trigger, and I know where I'm headed. I tried to write a couple novels that were never published. Were learning efforts, and that's the key lesson I learned. Know where you're going. You don't have to know every detail along the way, but you got to have the light at the end of the tunnel, a direction you're heading in, and that's all I have. I don't commit anything to paper. I don't have any outlines. I just start by knowing where I'm headed. And like to fill in the rest. It's just, you know, it's a long haul. I actually write quick. A lot of people take 4 years to write a book. I take about a year, but even still, that's a long time to stay with a story. And I have found, so everything's hit or miss, but I basically have found it's more fulfilling, and each writing day is more fun when you don't have a boss telling you what to do. And if you have an outline, that's a boss. It says, today you will write this. I want to sit down and not have anyone tell me. I want to see what happens. And I make all kinds of mistakes. I throw out pages. I waste days because I went down the wrong path. But that's the price you pay for having that the freedom in each day. Fall 2006 might be kind of late. I just know it won't be in the May cycle, because I have till January to write it, and I'll probably take up to January, and they just won't be able to bring it out that fast. So I would say it'll be sometime after June. It's called Echo Park, and it's Harry, still a cop. It's they get a call on the Cold Case Squad or the Open Unsolved Unit. There's a guy who's been convicted of a couple murders and is about to go. They're about to take up the death penalty phase. The prosecution wants to put him to death, and he's willing to trade. Give me a life sentence, I'll tell you about seven other people I killed. And it's really about Harry and him dealing with, Harry's got to make sure he's not trying to trick the prosecution into getting out of the death penalty. So Harry has to basically confirm these seven deaths, and they go back a number of years, and one of them happens to be one of Harry's old unsolved cases that has haunted him. And so there's an emotional component to it, and it's really about Harry in the sky. And it's called Echo Park, about halfway through it. Some of them could come back. The you know, anyone who's not been killed can come back is really the way it is. And I can, you know, and I can you know, put them all together. You know, I can find ways. I know Buddy's mostly associated with the McCaleb stories, but he could turn up any time in anything. I haven't really thought about him because he's kind of a peripheral character. And the book I'm writing now, Rachel Walling is a big part of it. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else from other stories. Right now, I think it's just her. A lot of people think that Irvin's out of the picture, but he plays a big part in this one I'm writing now. Like I say, they got to be killed or else they're still in the game. thanks, especially on a rainy night. Thanks for coming out. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Zadie Smith, Audrey Niffenegger, Nicholas Evans, Dan Savage, Clive Barker, Charles Blackstone, Al Franken, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on October 4th, 2005.